Chapter 11, Chartering and the House, Below the Radar. I was very open to these ideas. Charter schools, I thought, made sense. Speaker of the House, Bob Vanosik. March to April, 1991. Representative Becky Kelso introduced her House chartering bill, House File 773, companion to my Senate bill, on March 11, 1991. She lined up an impressive group of co-authors, including Representative Ken Nelson, Chair of the Education Finance Division. To the casual observer, chartering legislation appeared primed to pass the House, at least in some compromised form, for the first time. A Star Tribune article dated March 27, 1991, was headlined, "Chartered Schools Getting More Support." Said the writer, "This year, House Education Committee members are promoting the issue, suggesting that the concept has a good chance of being passed by both chambers." Not if Representative Bob McCarran had his way. He made no bones about his dislike for chartered schools. And as chair of the House's full Education Committee, he had enormous power to block any education legislation he didn't like. Elected in 1972, McCarran of Maple Lake was serving his 10th term in the Minnesota House. He had served nearly a decade as chair of the House Education Committee starting in the early 1980s. His district was primarily rural, so he had a strong following among his rural colleagues. He was a former high school teacher and former head coach of Minneapolis De La Salle High School football team. When McCarran passed away in 2008, retired Speaker of the House Bob Vanosik called him one of the most colorful legislators in the last 40 years. Other colleagues remembered him as both gruff and fun. In 1991, McCarran and Nelson shared the education leadership in the House DFL caucus. McCarran chaired the full 32-member House Education Committee, which focused on policy. Nelson chaired the 15-member Finance Division, a subgroup of the Full Education Committee tasked with appropriating the budget dollars designated for K-12 education. Generally, the allocation of budget dollars in Nelson's division carried more influence in the legislative process than the policy decisions made in McCarran's full committee. "Bob and I worked well in the caucus because Bob had a rough edge about him," noted Nelson in 2011. "He could appeal to certain fragments of the caucus, and I had sort of a gentler approach." The two were especially effective in providing more money for education in the House bill than in the Senate bill or governor's budget. Nelson observed, "I give him a lot of credit. He would just pound the table in caucus. We delivered a lot of extra money to K-12 education during the years I chaired the Finance Division." In a March 2011 interview, Vanosik described McCarran this way. "He was the chair of the Education Committee, he was a senior member, he was outspoken, and he could be viewed as being a little intimidating. His vehement opposition made it much more difficult for the chartering issue to get widespread support. McCarran had a base of support. On the other hand, Ken Nelson was chair of the Education Finance Division and a senior member. He was much more soft-spoken, much less intimidating." According to Nelson, McCarran was opposed to the chartering legislation because he was very close to the unions. But Kelso saw it differently, as she explained in an interview. "McCarran thought chartering was a stupid idea. I came to respect him as someone who followed his gut. He looked at things from a core set of principles. He was very opposed to vouchers, and he saw charter schools as a form of vouchers. End of story. There was no changing his mind. I didn't spend any time trying to convince him. He was a key person on the House side that was adamantly and inalterably opposed. Everybody knew exactly what he was thinking." Given his strong opposition to chartering, it was an ironic twist that McCarran himself had his name attached as sponsor of some chartering language in a comprehensive education reform bill he introduced early in the 1991 session. His broad education reform legislation, House File 350, co-authored by Nelson, Kelso, and Vanasek, included chartering language that was quite restrictive, requiring, for example, all chartered schools to honor district collective bargaining agreements. The restrictive provisions may have been included in the comprehensive reform agenda as a strategy to pass a watered-down version of chartering through the House with McCarran's support. That strategy, however, didn't go anywhere. The teacher union stopped the chartering provisions of House File 350 at the outset. But while union leaders spoke out aggressively and publicly against chartering, there was no indication they were mobilizing their members around the issue. It appeared that House members were hearing very little from constituent teachers on the issue. The public comments by union leaders seemed surprisingly strident against the backdrop of lack of activity among the rank and file at the time. At a House committee hearing on House File 350 in March, Robert Astrup, president of the Minnesota Education Association, MEA, said, "We absolutely disagree with Section 16 or any intent to allow creation of chartered schools." In the April 3, 1991 issue of Education Week, Astrup also blasted charter schools as a hoax that could cost millions of dollars and siphon resources from existing schools. A Star Tribune article dated March 27, 1991, quoted Sandra Peterson, president of the Minnesota Federation of Teachers, as saying chartered schools would drain resources from traditional schools. "It's just vouchers in a disguised form," she said. The strong language used early in the 1991 session by leaders of both teacher unions appeared as if they were trying to one-up each other. As Ted Coldery noted in one of his memos, "There's what some people call a war going on in Minnesota between the two unions, and it's not a time either can afford to be seen as anything but militant in defense of teachers' rights." Chartering was apparently becoming a target in that war. It appeared the war was being fought at the grass tops, not among the grassroots. So by the time Kelso introduced her chartering bill in the House on March 11, 1991, chartering proponents and opponents felt certain nothing about chartering could ever pass the House Education Committee. With the early public outcry by union leaders against chartering, opponents were confident that the war against chartering had already been won. Nevertheless, Kelso sought an informational hearing on her bill to educate the members about the idea. McCarran set the hearing for April 10th. The last thing Kelso wanted was for McCarran to call for a vote at the hearing. She knew if he did so, the bill would be defeated. She decided to plan for an informational hearing, and if worst came to worst, she'd withdraw her bill from the agenda. As Peter Vanderpoel wrote to Coldery on March 27th, "Becky says she doesn't or can't quite believe that McCarran would actually kill the bill, although she clearly is not at all certain at this point about his intentions. He does know that she does not have illusions about passing it or attempting to pass it." Kelso's bill did make it to hearing in McCarran's committee. It was the sixth of six bills heard in a two-hour period. In her February 2011 interview, Kelso said, "The hearing did not make much of an impression on me. I think the predictable people said the predictable things. There was never a lot of interest in charter schools on the House side. The interest groups were very low-key. The whole establishment was opposed to the idea, but not stirred up about it. My feel was that the teachers never got riled up about this. My cynical suspicion was that someone pretty important somewhere along the line told them not to worry because it wasn't going to happen." Although the hearing was cut short before all could testify, the record includes written testimony in support of the chartering legislation from someone who would later become a state representative and chair of the House Education Finance Division herself. Mindy Greiling, then school board chair of Roseville Area Schools, offered the following testimony to the House and later to the Senate. "From my perspective as a school board member, I support applying for charters from either the Minnesota State Board of Education or the local board. Reluctant school boards and unions may be more willing to seriously discuss charters locally if the opportunity to short-circuit them is available. I encourage you to give every consideration to liberating willing schools. I believe that enabling charter schools to exist would also provide a catalyst for real change within the system that would benefit all students, and I urge you to vote for House File 773. The House hearing only confirmed what Kelso already knew. Chartering hadn't made a big impact in the House for the third year in a row. But maybe not making an impact would turn out to be a plus. In her February 2011 interview, she said, "It was crystal clear to me from whenever I decided to get involved in this that the only hope for this was to have it come out of the Senate omnibus bill in the conference committee. However, the fact that it wasn't dealt with real strenuously in the House, in other words, it didn't get people riled up, was probably a plus. If it would have been in the House Omnibus Education Finance Bill, the opposition would have been extremely nervous because it would have been in the bills of both houses. That would have given them lots of advance notice. There would have been a lot of time for action against it." Kelso is now counting on the Senate chartering bill making it to the House Senate Conference Committee and that there would be 3 votes in favor of chartering among the 5 House conferees. The power of appointing those conferees rested with the most powerful person in the Minnesota House of Representatives, the Speaker of the House. Kelso had no idea what Vanosik was thinking about chartered schools. "I don't remember ever talking to him about it," said Kelso. "Education was not his thing, not his focus in any way, shape, or form." Well, maybe not a visible focus anyway. Vanosik, elected to the House in 1972, was Speaker of the House from the summer of 1987 through the 1991 legislative session. He supported both post-secondary enrollment options and open enrollment when they were controversial in the House. Vanosik was also aware of chartering because Koldery talked with him about it. In a March 2011 interview, Vanosik said, "I was very open to these ideas. Charter schools, I thought, made sense." He continued, "With charter schools, what appealed to me about it was a way to get around all the bureaucracy or all the rules in place. What I liked about the idea was the entrepreneurship, that you could have teachers in the lead of how best to come up with a program to educate students, rather than the traditional structure. I was very interested in those kinds of reforms." In the 1991 session, I had a proposal of my own that would have restricted education financing in a way so that the focus would be on the school building, not the district, but the school building. You'd have teachers, parents, and administrators set the main goals for that building, such as English as a second language in an urban area or more foreign languages in a rural area. You'd be held accountable for meeting the goals. If they met the goal, there would be financial reward for everybody in the building, the janitors, principals, and teachers. If they didn't meet the goals, there would be sanctions, including and leading up to that building being declared educationally bankrupt by the Department of Education. We also called for finding a way for teachers for whom the occupation didn't fit to guide them out of teaching, but do it in a non-adversarial way so you didn't have the unions lining up right away to support the teacher. My proposal was opposed by the superintendents, the principals, the teachers, just about everybody, so I knew I was on the right track. My caucus didn't even want me to introduce the bill. I finally said, "I'm going to introduce the bill." But I had to do it as an individual member, not representing the position of the DFL caucus. As I reflect on all these events, 20 years later, I realized chartering proponents were fortunate on 2 counts. First, the forces against chartering, particularly in the House, didn't take the legislation seriously based on how it had been defeated the previous 2 years. As before, they did not expect chartering would ever pass a House-Senate conference committee. Second, and unknown to almost everyone, the Speaker of the House was already predisposed to passage of the chartering legislation. That would later prove pivotal in the passage of chartering into law. This was the situation in the House as I worked the bill through Senate hearings in March and April of 1991. Unions may not have been riled up on the House side, but they were starting to work overtime on the Senate side.